All right, fantastic. The time is 1:30. This is Dane Herb of Travis County. I'm going to call to order the Greater Austin Area Telecommunications Network meeting of the Board of Directors for January 9th, 2024. Agenda item number one is a roll call.
I'm Sarah Eichelberger with Gatton, and I'll call the roll. Dane Herbat, Travis County.
Present.
Frank Ammons, Gatton.
Present.
Carlos De Matos, Gatton.
Present.
Gary Wiesman, Austin Community College.
Present.
Jaime Guerra, UT.
Present.
Steve Martin, City of Austin.
Present.
Mike Lorstorfer, Austin ISD.
Present.
Paul Hodge, Austin ISD.
Present.
Robert Sadler, LCRA.
Present.
Mark Stavis, City of Austin.
Present.
Steve Pyle, State of Texas DIR.
Present.
And Gatton contractors we have joining us are Doug Wilson with JC Communications.
Present.
Chris Gonzalez with Bricom.
Present.
And last but not least, Sid Falk with Bickerstaff Heath Delgado Acosta.
Present.
We've established a quorum.
All right. Thanks, Sarah. Agenda item number two is citizen communication. What do we have today?
Nothing at this time, sir.
Same here.
Moving on to agenda item number three, review and approve the minutes from the board meeting of December 5th, 2023, and special called board meeting of December 18th, 2023 in your packet.
Do we want to approve them separately or all in one shot, Dane, Sarah, whomever?
Let's do it separately just to allow if there's any conversation for either one.
This is Gary Wiesman with Austin Community College. I motion to approve the December 5th Gatton Board minutes as presented.
This is Jaime. I'll second.
We have a motion and a second to approve the board minutes from December 5th, 2023. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, management, can you please lead us through a vote?
Paul Hodge.
Aye.
Steve Martin.
Aye.
Gary Wiesman.
Aye.
Dane Herbat.
Aye.
Steve Pyle.
Aye.
Jaime Guerra.
Aye.
And Robert Sadler.
Aye.
December 5th minutes are approved.
Hey, this is Gary Wiesman. I motion to approve the December 18th special board meeting minutes as presented.
This is Steve. I second.
It has been motioned and seconded to approve the minutes of the special called board meeting of December 18th. Is there any further discussion? Okay, hearing none, management, can you please lead us through a vote?
Paul Hodge.
Aye.
Steve Martin.
Aye.
Gary Wiesman.
Aye.
Dane Herbat.
Aye.
Steve Pyle.
Aye.
Jaime Guerra.
Aye.
And Robert Sadler.
Robert Tine.
Aye.
The December 18th minutes are approved.
Okay, thank you very much. Moving on to agenda item number 4, board chairperson update. 4A is seeking approval for Palm Park relocation project.
Yeah, so this is Frank. Happy New Year, everybody. This agreement is between the City of Austin and Gatton. It's been reviewed and approved by both the Gatton and the City of Austin attorneys, and it's ready for execution. There's no fees under this agreement due to the Gatton Interlocal as it exists today. So management is requesting approval and execution of this agreement. This is just a side note on this one. This agreement's really critical to Gatton when it pursues the work of the decommissioning of the Austin Convention Center. It's going to come into play for it. So this conduit that's being provided by the City of Austin is going to be helpful for that.
Okay, so this Frank, do we have a? Go ahead, Gary.
No. Go ahead, Dane.
Just asking if we have a cost that we're looking at, or what are we looking to approve today?
Yeah, so it's the agreement itself. There's no associated fees on an agreement due to the Gatton Interlocal. So basically, what it is, it's a conduit system there at Palm Park at the City of Austin's building. It's a duct bank. And we're able to use conduit within that duct bank. We just have to get this agreement approved to be able to do so. As I mentioned, it's been reviewed by Gatton Legal, and it's been okayed by Gatton Legal to advance for execution. We just need approval for it to move forward.
Will there be a cost if and when Gatton decides to take advantage of this system? Or just the cost of us pulling fiber?
Just the cable cost. So when we, that's a good question, Dane. So when we do the decommission, the reroute, which I'm going to speak to a little bit later, we're in the permit process of, this will definitely be involved with that. This is in that same area. Just a little bit more information for you. This whole area right here is under development, and it's going to remain under development. It also ties into that same area where, it's literally block by block by block where we're going underneath Cap Metro. And we've got that agreement as well to be able to do that. They're coming up for approval. And then you've got the engineering that's taking place around to get the rings out of the convention center. And this ties to that. So, it's definitely a very important agreement for Gatton. And I think this agreement's been out there for a little bit floating around, but I just wanted to make sure we got it in front of the board today. As it's part of your handouts, and to make sure you're aware of it and that Sid's okayed it to move forward. Good question. Yeah, we'll see the cost when we pull the fiber for sure.
Is it, Sid, is it tied to our interlocal in any way, or is it a completely separate and unique?
It's a separate agreement, but the interlocal, as Frank points out, permits us to use City of Austin facilities at no fee. And that's what he was talking about.
Sounds fantastic. Sounds like a win-win.
Yeah, definitely.
Do we have a motion?
This is Gary Weisman. Motion to approve the infrastructure license agreement between the City of Austin and Gatton for use of the conduit systems in the Palm Valley area. Palm Park relocation project. Sorry.
This is Jaime. I'll second that motion.
We have a motion and a second to approve the infrastructure license subsurface conduit use agreement between Gatton and the City of Austin for the Palm Park relocation project. Is there any further discussion? Okay, hearing none. Management, can you please lead us through a vote?
Paul Hodge.
Aye.
Steve Martin.
Aye.
Aye.
Gary Weissman.
Aye.
Dane Herbat.
Aye.
Steve Pyle.
Aye.
Jaime Guerra.
Aye.
And Robert Sadler.
Aye.
The motion passes.
Okay, good job. That's excellent. 4B, review of Gatton site list and network right percentages.
Yes, this agenda item was requested at the last board meeting. The 2025 site list was approved in the last board meeting. And Dane, I believe you just kind of wanted to go over how the calculation is derived, especially for our newer members. So as a reminder, the calculation for the network rights is in Exhibit B of the interlocal agreement. And that's the first page in the handout there. It's based directly on three factors: the presence on a ring, the sites on a ring, and the fibers on a ring. So presence on a ring is defined as having one or more sites per participant on a ring. The sites on the ring, you know, that's how many sites you have on each ring. And the fibers on the ring, how many fibers are allocated to your entity on each ring. So those three factors are divided. And Carlos, if you can go down to the second page, this is the summary page of the site list. The Excel version, which is on the SharePoint site, you know, shows you all of the formulas, but you can see you have the sites up there in orange, the strands allocated to each entity in blue, and whether or not you have a presence, meaning you have one or more sites on those rings, in green. And then you can see how those are divided in the table below that. And then those are equally divided by three. You see on the far right, on the second set of table, that those three calculations, those three percentages, are divided equally to get your network rights percentage. Please let me know if you have any questions.
So it's worth noting that historically, these percentages do fluctuate year to year, but they don't fluctuate very much.
No, and you can see in the far right column in black on the very bottom, that is the difference from the FY24 to the FY25 network rights percentages. And I believe that the biggest difference was 0.11% for ACC.
So, go ahead.
I was gonna say your network rights percentage, the annual budget that we set, your annual contribution amount is that network rights percentage of that total annual budget. And you see that on the budget document. It has those contributions, your percentage, and what your contribution is based on your percentage at the top of the budget page. That's not in the handouts. That was last month's handouts. I'm sorry, Dane, what were you going to say?
Question for you and Frank and Carlos. If an entity were to hit some financial hardship and interested in reducing their Gatton spend, what kinds of things could they do? How could they approach that to get into a better financial place?
I think that's more of a question for Sid, based on the interlocal.
This is Sid. Depends on the situation as to what the answer is. My understanding is that some, if not all, of the entities are assigned fiber in various rings that are not currently being used. And those assignments are part of the network rights calculation. So it is at least theoretically possible for an entity that wants to reduce that financial footprint, if you will, to assign or sell those dark fibers that are assigned to it to another entity that would reduce their network rights. Unless there were a massive reassignment, however, it's not going to make a huge financial difference, but it's always possible. there really isn't a lot of leeway in the interlocal to get any kind of relief, either permanent or temporary, short of getting rid of facilities, because this is a co-tenancy, which means essentially what we've already said is that your share of occupation of the facilities is something that you pay for.
So in other words, moving sites off of the ring, selling off additional spare strands that aren't needed, identifying rings that that the entity doesn't need a presence in, and just essentially just moving these numbers down.
Yeah, just divesting yourself of some parts of the things that contribute to your overall share. And of course, something we've talked about all the time is it comes up in the context of the review and calculation that shows compared to commercial costs what you're saving. If you're not actually planning to cease to use connectivity and you have to go get it somewhere else, you're not really likely to end up saving any money. It may cost you more to leave facilities that are on Gatton and try to fill them up somewhere else.
Okay, well, thank you for bringing this, Sarah and Frank. What questions does the board and other members have regarding this calculation?
This is Steve. I had one question. Okay. When you say there would have to be an entity that would need to take on those additional fibers in order to make that work, or would they go back into a pool?
That's a great question. I know that we have the ability to sell fibers to another entity. Do we have the abilities to just leave fiber that's already been owned and give it back to the general fund of Gatton?
Well, if you think about how if you think about how the numbers work, something that is not assigned to a specific entity might do some give some relief to the entity giving up the fiber and putting it back, so to speak, in the common pool. But each entity pays its network rights share, which might be an adjusted network rights, a reduced one, of the common, the maintenance for the common dark fiber pool. And I will say that the interlocal agreement is very vague about whether that's an appropriate way to assign fiber. I know we have some that is not formally assigned to a specific Gatton entity. My suspicion is that the numbers on all of these mean that even if you did a fair amount of that kind of manipulation, you're not going to really pare the cost down very much.
Okay, so from a legal standpoint, it's a gray area. We don't know.
A bit, yes.
Okay. Yeah, so Steve, definitely there's you have an entity has the ability to sell strands to another entity, but just giving them up and putting them into a pool of dark fiber, it's a gray area legally, and I don't think that's ever been done or really discussed. So it's a good question.
I think that's correct. Let me also comment that it is possible, and I'd have to look at it, but I'm going from memory of having read this section some months ago. Under the interlocal, it is possible for a Gatton entity to allow the use by a third party of its fiber assignment. That use has to be for a, quote, governmental purpose, unquote, which as a practical matter means a third party governmental entity might be able to use, for instance, UT's dark strands, if you've got any, Jaime. And yep. You could, in principle, obtain rent for them. Now, having said that, there are all kinds of questions we'd want to look at really carefully, like whether or not that lease or other arrangement for letting a third party use it has tax consequences, for instance. Shouldn't because if it's a governmental entity, it is at least in principle not subject to the usual taxes. That is tax exempt. So it might be a wash, but it'd be something that if we were going to be serious about it, we'd need to look very carefully at the practical and the legal ramifications under the interlocal agreement and under general principles that we've talked about for tax exemption and so on. You could not, and it's pretty clear under the interlocal, you couldn't lease fiber you weren't using that was assigned to you to a third-party non-governmental entity, because that would not be a governmental use. And I'm fairly certain that even if the ILA let you do that, that is, didn't have the governmental use restriction, that there would be tax consequences.
I will say LCRA is very limited in how it's able to utilize its strands, which binds us. I mean, we have to segregate traffic so that we're not sending certain traffic over Gatton strands because of that very reason. So it does make it would make it difficult for LCRA to assume more strands on Gatton. I assume it would make it difficult to put anyone else, like a third party, on Gatton.
It just depends on who it is. If it were a school of some sort, we could look at that. And of course, we have entertained those kinds of potential proposals or incidences from time to time, and for a variety of reasons have concluded either that it was way more risk and trouble than it was worth, or in the case of, for instance, the hospital, teaching hospital using Gatton fiber, the problem of policing the use so that no private use got made was deemed way too difficult. And it's kind of a strict liability thing. If you mess up and don't actually limit the use to governmental function, all the other stuff kicks in, regardless of whether you intended, whether it was purposeful or not, or an accident. So it's just, in general, not worth the risk, except in very specific, limited circumstances.
I would hope that there are some kind of penalties that can be put in place in case Jaime wants to lease any fiber to any Aggies.
That's a different problem.
Unfortunately, they're allowed.
Soon to be an SEC problem.
Yeah.
Okay, what other questions or comments do we have on the network rights calculations?
This is Jaime. I'll just echo what Sarah said. The Excel spreadsheet is on our SharePoint site, and I've done it in the past before UT acquired strands, where I did the changes in the number of strands UT had just to kind of predict what future network rights percentages would be for us. So it'd be pretty easy for other entities to do the same if they're wanting to divest strands and maybe sell it to somebody else.
Yes, and I'll say if an entity ever wants to have a scenario, if they have a scenario that they want to see what their calculation would be, they can let me know, and I can also put that in the spreadsheet and figure that out for them.
Okay, thank you, Sarah. Moving on to agenda item 4C, Gatton Fiber Purchase RFP.
Yeah, so this is Frank again, and for this one, there is a RFP that currently exists today, or agreements that currently exist today between Graybar and Anixter for Gatton to be able to purchase fiber directly from them, being the distributors. And in 2018, it was actually March of 2018 that those agreements were executed. And what drove that at the time was the fact that we had caught wind of the fiber, the cost of it going up and the lead times being long. So we had actually, network management had actually made at that time a request to purchase a large amount of fiber, which did get approved and which we've since used. But we went through our vendors at the time. But what that conversation took place caused is one of the members thought, well, look, if we can get it directly from our we need to order bulk fiber, you know, outside of our $40,000 maintenance, what we keep, if we need to order large amounts of fiber, maybe we can save money by going directly to distributor or, you know, or if lead times get bad. Well, we've never actually used these RFPs, or these agreements, I should say. We never used them once. A couple of the things that are in play there is storage space for where we would put this. We talked to both Gray Bar and Anixter, and they both offered the ability to store at those facilities should we make a large purchase. There were some time constraints associated with that. I think if I recall correctly, we had to use them within 2 years. Any fiber that was purchased by one of them and the other one, we had to use the fiber by 1 year. So that really didn't work out for us. And being that this art, so that's a major issue for us as Gatton and how we function and do our maintenance. And with this RFP never being used since 2018, I don't think we need to reissue it. It expires June 30th, by the way, the agreements that are currently in place. But being we've never used it, we do go through our MAC and maintenance vendors to get our fiber, as we historically have throughout Gatton's history. There is a 15% markup that's part of their RFPs, part of their agreements, and part of their bids that they're allowed for material. So they see that. Other than that, I don't really see a pro of keeping this these agreements in place. So we're looking for direction from the board. If somebody thinks, yeah, you know what, we should keep them in place, and then let's discuss it. And if not, then like I said, I'd make the recommendation that we don't keep them in place. I can't think of any.
I will say, yeah. Gray Bar's warehouse space has significantly increased since 2018 with their new distribution off of 130. So that is one thing to consider.
Yep.
Yeah, this is Jaime. I'm thinking. Oh, go on.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that given that we didn't use this, I don't see a need to continue with it. Obviously, keep it on the shelf in case we ever need to resurrect it, but I'm not seeing a big need to renew it.
Gary, do you remember back to 2018? Was the conversation around being able to buy a lot of fiber in a short amount of time due to some kind of an emergency?
Yeah, that was back when there were some issues with obtaining fiber, and we were just trying to find ways that we could possibly other avenues to get the fiber and to hopefully lock in a price, because it was fluctuating up and down.
Okay.
Quite a bit.
Yeah. So one of the interesting things about the agreements, we never was actually able to lock in a price, because the agreements themselves, it has no base or annual amount that we paid. And it was supposed to be a purchase price was going to be determined by each purchase. So every time we wanted to purchase fiber from Gray Bar or Anixter, we would have to get a PO from them. And then, that's understandable, because the market fluctuates. You know, we've gone from, it doesn't fluctuate that much, but it does fluctuate enough to where they didn't want to agree to a locked in price. So there is that. And that's really of no benefit to Gatton to keep the agreement in place where we're having to, you know, get a PO from them and possibly negotiate fiber prices, which I don't think we can even negotiate with them, because it is what it is. And they're going to get it from, as a distributor, they're going to get it from the manufacturer. As far as lead times are concerned, there's no real benefit for having this in place, because, we keep track of the market, and our vendor can get fiber just as quickly as we could as a network management team from Gray Bar or Anixter. You're right, Gary, that's exactly where the thought originated. I think a lot of that was John talking about, you know, let's try to see if we can get locked in on a price. We just they never would agree to it because of the way the market is, the way the industry flows, and the price changes in fiber.
So Frank, if we were to suffer some kind of a catastrophe and we needed 100,000 feet, could we get that through our distributors?
We could. So we still use Great Bar and Annixter. We just go through our vendor to get it. And I don't know if either one of the vendors want to speak to that fact, but I think, you know, JC, with JC in the room and Bracom in the room, you know, unless there's something going on in the market that, you know, at the time of the catastrophe taking place where we couldn't get our hands on it, I think if I remember correctly, Gray Bar stores, you know, being that we've gone to 192, it's not what it used to be where we had to, you know, order special 114 fiber, and it was very, very hard to get, and very long, the longer lead times within 192 were much better shape. So I think, you know, I think the answer is yes, Dane, on that, because, and Chris and Doug, you correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you guys could get it just as fast as we could. And as we continue to monitor the market, you know, if there's a need where lead times are driving up over a year and we're seeing projects where we need that fiber prior to that, then we can make a massive order as needed. Right now, the maintenance, you know, the maintenance inventory calls for 40,000 feet in the event of a catastrophe, but we could certainly, you know, that's to make major repairs at any point in time. We could certainly up that if we ever needed to, or Gatton thinks we should.
Hey, Frank, this is Chris with Bricon.
Yep.
You're correct. So whether if Gatton bought it directly or if Bricon bought it on behalf of Gatton as a pass-through, the lead times are the same. It doesn't increase or decrease. The lead times are lead times. It depends on what the market is driven at that time. We've seen, you know, 52 weeks to 18 weeks lead time. It is, yeah. It fluctuates throughout the year and what's going on in the market right now. So lead times wouldn't change. The price of fiber obviously would over time, but other than that.
And Chris, remind me how much we're keeping on hand as an emergency. Is it 50,000?
I believe we have 40,000+ feet on hand. That's between the 192, and we still have a couple of remnants of the 114.
Okay. Frank, what's our emergency policy?
To keep 40,000 feet.
40,000
feet to be in stock at all times.
Okay. Does anybody on the board disagree with management's recommendation here?
I don't. Disagreed.
Yeah, it sounds good to me.
We always have it on hand if we need to reissue it. We have these agreements that we can tee off of, to Jaime's point earlier.
This is Chris again. I just pulled up the inventory. So we have 66,000 feet of 192 and 8,600 feet of 114 currently in the Gatton stock.
Okay, sounds good. All right, sounds like we're ready to move on then. 4D, Austin ISD 2022 bond construction impact.
Paul,
you got it.
Oh, sorry.
I apologize.
Go ahead if you got something to say first.
No, I don't. I just wanted to lead into it just to remind everybody that of the project that and what all it entails and the possibility for Gatton members to be a part of it and have rack space or have a rack assigned to each entity on the Travis high school site. So go ahead. My apologies, Paul.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing that's we shrunk down the space a little bit after seeing what Austin Energy has at their Decker power plant. So we're probably going to shrink down to a 14 rack building. So each entity will have about half a rack in there. So we'll have about three racks dedicated and one rack dedicated to just Gatton fiber. So we're waiting on some pricing to come back from Schneider Electric, and we hope to kind of get that going to be completed by possibly summer of 2025. So that's all the update I got right now.
All right, any further discussion? Okay, 4E, Gatton backup knock decommissioning.
Yeah, so once again, this is Frank, and I've got some updates here for you on this one. The professional, you know, we're underneath the design phase of it. having that Paul Park agreement approved in this meeting previously is a big part of the NOC decommissioning because it affects that route. So that's a good step forward, getting that completed. Looking forward to having it executed so that it can be built and we can use it when it comes time. The professional for the Gatton Backup NOC decommission, the professional engineering design is currently, which is the AELCC and DAPC, which is Austin Utility Coordination Committee and the Downtown Area Project Zone, is plus or minus 90 days. We anticipate a little bit over 90 days for that to get reviewed and approved by those two groups. And then the general permit program is one that typically takes the longest to get approved. And we're looking right around 4 to 5 months. We're just waiting for the additional comments from every utility that's located along Cesar Chavez and Red River for them to sign off on us, whether that we're in conflict or not with them or they're in conflict with us. And then lastly, and I mentioned this earlier as I was speaking to Palm Park, we have the Cap Metro portion, which is on hold. So just as a reminder, you'll hear more about this upcoming in meetings going forward, but Cap Metro has their tracks there, which is going to be part of our reroute, and Grande, which is now known as Astound. We're finalizing that agreement with them or working through that agreement with them, but in the process, they have to, we can't move forward until they show us the crossing agreement or the permission they have from Cap Metro for us to be able to go underneath that railroad. So that's what was requested from them. And that was, you know, just right previous to Christmas. It's been a holiday. So waiting to hear back from them. Hopefully we'll hear something back by the end of this week. Carlos has been working hard and heavy on that one. And that's it as far as the backup NOC decommissioning. We're moving forward. As a reminder, you know, the convention center has asked for us to be out by spring of 2025. So I think we'll be in good shape to do that if Gatton decides to move forward with all the rest of the fiber work and what needs to take place next. We'll be bringing that to you as we move further along. Are there any questions?
You want to just go right into the next one, Frank?
Yeah, I got it. So, absolutely. So, the Gatton Backup NOC Relocation Associate Agreement Subcommittee update. Everything's been going well with the subcommittee. We've made some really good progress in decisions and what needs to be done and what should take place moving forward. We have the latest update that we have is, and Steve, you may want to speak to this also to give an update for Steve Martin, that is, for what you sent out to Chief Davis. But where we're at right now, we're waiting for Chief Davis. He's the authority, the person that says, yes, we can move forward with Fire Station 4. We did get approval from City of Austin Real Estate. So that's a big hurdle that we got accomplished. And then there's a special group that meets for the City of Austin Special Projects Committee. So this project went in front of that committee and it passed as well. We got their approval to move forward. And that was two big hurdles that the fire department was concerned about. The next one is the Neighborhood Association and the Historical Society. Well, number one, for the latter, the Historical Society, we're not actually going to be in contact with the building. So the question has been raised to Chief Davis, who's the approver, is do we need to even contact the City of Austin Historical Society because we're not actually affecting the building in any way, shape, form. We're not, you know, so there's no changes going to be made to the building. It's not the property that's the historical portion, it's the building itself. And then the Neighborhood Association, the question has also been raised, do we need to contact them or attempt to try and get any permission? So there's been some thoughts on it, and the fire department may want to be transparent with the Neighborhood Association and say, hey, this is what we're going to be doing. This is the traffic you can expect. Which is very minimal because, as a reminder, this is a moderate type building that we're looking at and going to be seeking approval for. So I think that's pretty much it for right now. Let me see. I made some notes. The subcommittee met yesterday. Let me just check my notes real quick. Big something to note here for all the members at the tech meeting, which is coming up on the 23rd, we'll be providing network managers is going to be providing a preliminary design and site layout for you to review. Hopefully between now and then, Chief Davis gives us approval to move forward or at least entertains a meeting with Gatton or with the network management team or the City of Austin board members to discuss in greater detail what all this involves. But from what I'm seeing and from what I'm hearing, with us getting approval for the Strategic Facility Governance Committee and the real estate, we're sitting in really good shape.
So question, do you know if we are required to get approval from the Neighborhood Association, or are we just giving them an FYI? Is it city policy? Is it a legal thing? Do we know?
Yeah. Oh, so we don't. So that's what I'm trying. Yeah, we're trying to ascertain that. One of the chiefs had actually sent that to an email and another chief. What's the standard practice here? Have we done this previously? Are we required to do this at all? Historically, what have we done before? And everybody's just waiting on an answer from the authority to say, yeah, this is something we typically do or not, or something we need to do or not.
Yeah, this is Steve Martin with Steve Austin. We have posed the question to them, and Chief Taliha, which is the chief that's over facilities and logistics for Austin Fire Department, he's the one who actually is sort of pushed this idea forward that we perhaps do not need approval from these other two groups because we are not doing anything that will affect the aesthetic, affecting the neighborhood, or affecting the building itself. So that question is in front of Chief Davis. And so we're just really waiting for Chief Davis to get back to us. I did send another prompt to Chief Davis on this question that Chief Taliha had asked at the end of last month. But holidays and everything else, he probably just hadn't had a chance to get to it. So I put it at the top of his inbox. So hopefully we hear back from him here shortly on that question.
Sounds good. We certainly want to be respectful to the residents of the neighborhood, but at the same time, requiring their approval, I see as a risk to our project.
It is.
Okay. Any other questions?
Our local resident here.
Not sticking my face in it.
All right, Sid's not weighing in on that one. Sounds good.
I am curious, though, what's the footprint of this thing likely to be?
We're going to be 1,000 square feet.
What shape do we know?
It's a rectangular shape. It's a 20 by 40 and then 20 by 40, which is the same shape as the NOC in the Austin Convention Center, and then a 10 by 20 space for the generator, which is separate and outside. That's what everybody's going to be seeing at the tech committee meeting coming up as well. Any other questions?
What questions, comments do you have about the NOC, either decommissioning or the relocation aspect? Hearing none, looking forward to the tech meeting, so that we can see some prints and some layout. It's going to be exciting. One more question. So is this coming from the subcommittee? The footprint and the initial design, has that been produced by the subcommittee?
Yeah, so so this is something that network management has been working with the data center operations group for with the City of Austin to ascertain, and it's something that Carlos has been working on and has the design. Carlos, did you send that out to the subcommittee yesterday afternoon? I can't remember if you did or not. I don't remember seeing it, but I remember in our meeting yesterday you said you were going to.
Please let me know if you did not receive it, because I did send it.
Okay.
Yeah, I got it.
This is Jaime. We got it. Yep. And this is Jaime again. Our goal is for the subcommittee to kind of give some feedback to network management so that hopefully once we review it during the tech committee meeting, there's very little concerns or discussions.
Excellent. Yep. I was going to ask for the subcommittee to do that and provide some initial input.
Yeah. And Dana, I just want to add to also Jaime, the subcommittee is meeting again prior to the tech meeting. So that's going to give us opportunity as a network management team to work with DCO if the subcommittee has any recommendations or changes that they see or questions.
And I'm going to save an email. I'm good on that time that y'all sent out. So sorry I didn't send that out yesterday.
Oh, yeah. So my meeting invite. Yes. Thank you, Paul. Yep. If you haven't accepted it, please do so. We'll get it. Everybody else I think has.
Okay, excellent. We're going to go ahead and move on then. 4G, property damage claim against J.D. Abrams and Lowstar Paving.
This is Sid. Not much to report. I think I told you last time that the attorney for Lone Star, which is the first subcontractor, then there's another subcontractor, and it's the subcontractor of that subcontractor, four down the line, that actually caused the damage. The sticking point in part has been their insurance company and their insurance lawyer and adjuster. The Lone Star attorney before Christmas sent an indemnification demand letter. It's called something else, but that's the gist of it, because their contract structure requires the subs to indemnify the contractor above them in the event that they cause any problem and have a third party claim. We had hoped and do hope that that will sober the insurance company for the subcontractor that actually did the damage up enough that they will agree to discuss settlement, maybe in the context of a mediation. We don't know yet. It was unclear at the last meeting whether that letter had been sent by the Lone Star attorney. We verified that it has, and that the insurance company for the sub has actually accepted it, and apparently now are aware that they're going to have to indemnify it, which means pay for the legal defense, or in part means pay for the legal defense of all three contractors above them, if they don't get this wrapped up. And that may sober them up and bring them to the settlement tables. That's our hope.
What questions do we have for Sid? All right, hearing none, hopefully we can get a resolution there soon. Frank, turn it over to you. Network Managers update.
Yeah, so I'm going to go into the project status report. I just want to preface the Network Managers update with the weather that's coming ahead. So I don't know if everybody's seen it, but Sunday over the night, Monday morning throughout the night, we're going to be down in the teens, and we're not going to be back out of the 30s until Wednesday the 17th. So as always, whenever you see weather like that, I'm seeing some chance of actually snow for Sunday, Monday morning, 24% chance, some 15 mile an hour winds. So nevertheless, we're monitoring the network. As you know, we on the Super Ring down there, we've had some brittle fiber. I'll get into that here in just a little bit, how that test went. So we're just keeping a close eye on the network, and we're ready to rock and roll should we need to in event of inclement weather affecting the network. I just want to let you all know that. And also, if you hadn't seen that forecast, be prepared for it. It's been a while since we've seen that, but it's on its way. I'm hoping the precipitation stays away, that element at least. So into the report for Gatton Active Projects, we've got A1N Upgrade Segment 1 scheduled. So that's the A1N segment that needs to get completed. Don't have any problems with it or issues. It's good to go. For Gatton completed projects, we have Superine North damage. This is the brittle buffer tubes ones that we scheduled for. These tubes are brittle, but it's our belief that they're going to be okay, because as long as we are looking at – we're doing an analysis that we're bringing to the tech committee so the tech committee can decide whether or not to move forward to replace these segments. I think it's going to be in the best interest of Gatton to do so, and then we'll go out and get quotes to do that. As it stands right now, when we strip the fiber back on the tubes, they are brittle, but they're not as brittle as they were at the case. So I think that gives us some leeway there. But being that these, you know, we're outside of the manufacturer's warranty on these fibers, I'm hopeful that maybe we can get them replaced if the budget allows for us to do so. And I'm waiting on that report to be completed, and we're going through all the notes on that right now to have that developed so that the technical subcommittee can make a recommendation. So in this weather that we're going to get, with it freezing like it is, that's one particular area I'm very concerned about on Super Ring North to see what takes place. So and then the next one for the completed projects is A1 in segment 4, which is completed on the 7th. And then I'm going to jump down here to the next report for developer-driven projects. This is that 4th and Sabine. You've heard me mention a couple times here. We're working on an agreement with Grande/Astound to go underneath the Cap Metro Cross, and it all ties into that area that the construction is taking place down there, and will be part of the City of Austin's Gatton decommission of the City of Austin Convention Center. Also, for Gatton Entity specific projects, there is a B1 South City of Austin Fire Station 53 completed on the 4th, and then UT Pickle Node redundancy install then completed on the 4th as well. Now, that I don't want to be misleading here. That Pickle Node install, and Jaime, you may want to speak to this, but that node installs is completed for a portion of it. The way I understand it is UT is still in need of additional fibers there. So when we replace the 192 count, then UT would be made whole for that project.
I think we'll be able to get, this is Jaime, I think we'll be able to get what we need accomplished. And if Chris is here, as long as the fiber reaches Northeast High School. But I'll talk more offline with Chris. But in terms of Gatton concerns, there shouldn't be no more imminent work happening in splice cases. Hopefully it's just patching at nodes.
Yeah, just Chris, just keep me in the loop, or I'm either one, just keep me in the loop on that, because yeah, if there is any impact to Gatton, please just let us know so we can let all the other members know. But yeah, that's the way I understood it too. It might be a way of getting it done where there's not another impact. So that was it for getting entity specific, and that's all I have for the project status report now. You know, we got through the holidays, we got the January coming, holding a meeting here I think on the 18th with the maintenance MAC vendor, and then gonna be circling back to the other MAC vendor here as well to go through each project, trying to project what is and what is not able to be completed between now and end of Gatton's fiscal year. So we'll have some good information for you coming up on that for the board to review and be aware of as we work with AIST with those projections as well. Any questions? All right, hearing none, Sarah.
Carlos, if you could please bring up the job budget report. Okay, so we are tracking 45 jobs totaling $2.78 million. So far for FY24, 12 jobs have been completed and $430,000 has been invoiced. That leaves 33 jobs pending and $2.6 million encumbered. We did get another reimbursement. We got the reimbursement from TxDOT for a partial reimbursement for the CapEx South expenses that we incurred in FY23, and we got the settlement from USIC, so that brings our total recoveries for project reimbursements and damage claims to $161,648 for FY24, and that brings our fund balance bottom line to $1.08 million. Please let me know if you have any questions. And as Frank said, you know, we're going to be meeting with the vendors to determine how many projects or which projects are going to be expended in FY24. and maybe bringing the request for a fund balance transfer to the February board meeting if we need to allocate any more money to those POs.
Okay, and then Frank, did you want to cover the cost avoidance?
I've got that one. So this is just a notification to the board. Every 2 years, we do this cost avoidance report, which illustrates how much each entity saves by being a member of Gatton. The last one we did in FY22 illustrated a cost savings combined of $35 million. And to let you know, that report is now available on our website on the main www.gatton.org homepage. We have that Gatton video, and that Gatton video is pretty dated now, and so the costs that were mentioned in the video have actually gone up quite a bit. So we did put a note under that video link to say, you know, the cost avoidance has increased since then, and for the most updated report to click here, and it will bring you to a link that goes to that cost avoidance report. And so once we get this FY24 one completed, we will link to that one on the website as well. And this is a valuable tool that entities can bring back to their entities, the leadership, to illustrate, you know, the benefits of being a part of Gatton. And so look for an email from me in this month that will have you fill out the form with your circuits and everything, and then we will calculate that based on benchmarks pricing from DIR and UT. You know, Jaime, I may reach out to you and Harold as well to get some benchmark pricing.
Sure thing.
So we anticipate bringing that to either the March or April board meeting for presentation. And that's all I have about that. Let me know if you have any questions.
All right, moving on. Thank you, Frank and Sarah. We do not need executive session, so we're going to skip items 6 and 7 and move on to agenda item number 8, discussion and possible action regarding the financial report and current fiscal year budget issues.
This is Sarah again. This is for the month ending November 30th. Our beginning fiscal year balance was $1.745 million. Revenue we've taken in to date, $1.734. We've expended $1.142 million for an ending fund balance of $2.337 million. And then you add in our $2.1 million in emergency reserve. That is a total Gatton bank account of $4.4 million for the month ending November 30th. And please do scroll through the entire report, you know, as you have time, list all the expenses and revenues. And please let me know if you have any questions. This report is put together monthly by Austin ISD.
Okay, not hearing any questions. Moving on to agenda item number 9, meeting and action item summary.
Yeah, so this is Frank, and we cover a lot of good information, a lot of good stuff in this meeting today, but I didn't capture any action items. So if I miss anything, please let me know. But, you know, there's a lot of stuff that went forward today and a lot of good, great questions asked, but I didn't receive any action items that I captured.
Okay, not hearing anything then. Thank you, Frank. We'll move on to agenda item number 10, confirm date, time, and location for the next board meeting, February 6, 2024 at 1 p.m. So we must be in one of our management SLA review periods here at the Service Center or via Microsoft Teams. Thank you all for your participation, and this meeting is adjourned at 2:30 p.m.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, sir.